Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you so much for joining me this hour. Fiddler on the Roof is a Broadway classic. It was first produced in 1964 and went on to run continuously for almost a decade. Now, a new production of this beloved musical offers something that most American audiences haven't yet seen: the opportunity to hear the entire production in Yiddish. For example.
Wenn ich bin ein Rothschild, ich bin bum. Ganze Tag rot ich bini bum. Wenn ich bin ein reicher Mann.
This version of Fiddler on the Roof opened on February 21st at Stage 42, and runs through June 30th. And none other than Tevye and Golda themselves, who are played by Stephen Skibell and Jennifer Babiak, join us in studio. Thank you so much for coming on a show day, you guys. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I have to tell you, though, we have now been extended to September 1st by popular demand.
Wow.
So that has been exciting. That was just after we opened. They opened up more blocks of seats.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
well, we know where you'll be for the summer.
That's right.
have either of you done anything like this where you've actually had to perform in a language that you didn't really know?
I've never done a full musical in another language. I did Grease Das Musical in Germany and Switzerland, and we started in English, and then For popular demand, we learned the dialogue in German and then sang the songs in English because everyone knows the songs to Grease. So that was my first time. That was like in 2003.
Wow.
So that was my first time doing a show in half in another language. But this is my first time doing a full musical in another language and my first time doing Yiddish at all.
And the only thing I've ever done like it is when I've dipped my toe into the world of opera, which is very similar in that respect. And audiences who are thinking, oh, I won't want to go see this in Yiddish because how will I understand it? It is similar to going to see anything in a foreign language. There's super titles, both in English and Russian on either side of the stage. So, but that's the only thing I've ever done was a few operas in Italian and French, but nothing remotely like this, which has so much dialogue as well as song in a foreign language.
I wish you could see these two actors' faces because when they're like, nothing like this, their eyes are big and rolling. So just tell us about that experience. I can see it as something that has been so monumental and
you'll
never forget.
Well, I'll just say, I mean, I'm fond of saying that because when we first started it last June downtown at the Museum of Jewish Heritage is where we started, and we were extended through the end of the year down there. It was meant to only be a six-week summer gig, and it just kept getting extended. So when we were signed on to do it, it was crack your head, learn this 3-hour musical for 6 weeks, for a 6-week run. And it really was a labor of love, and it was equal parts for me, labor and love. It was no joke, the hardest thing I've ever tried to do. And I have in my past played Hamlet and Richard II and really heavy duty roles. And Tevye is right up there in terms of what he goes through, but also the challenge of trying to master the idiom of Yiddish.
Sounds like it must have been a rigorous process.
Yes, it was. And, you know, we had 4 weeks of rehearsal
in
the beginning.
Well, three, wasn't it?
Oh, right, three, and then tech and previews then started. So we all were learning the Yiddish and the choreography and the music and the staging and the blocking all at once. So they were really organized there, though.
Very organized.
Our stage management team, the whole design team, that it was like, okay, choreography in this room, music in this room, Yiddish coaching in this room, you know. So thankfully, that really, it was like a seamless process.
Yeah, the Volksbühne, which was the original producing theater, and is, I think, the oldest theater in America and the oldest surviving Yiddish theater in the world. They know how to get non-Yiddish speakers up and running in very short order. I mean, it was diligent and it was painstaking, but they were there every step of the way, correcting. We were told early on, I was scared about this. They said, oh, your Yiddish-speaking audiences are going to have no qualms about correcting your Yiddish from their seats. And so I was like, well, that will definitely make me forget my lines.
Yes.
And thankfully, that didn't happen. And the greatest joy I had downtown, we still do get, I believe, Yiddish speakers uptown, you know, now that we're on the official off-Broadway. But downtown, it was a lot of Yiddish speakers. And I would see people after the show, and they would come up to me spouting in Yiddish, you know, rambling in Yiddish, assuming that I spoke Yiddish, and I was happily deceiving them, but I would have to tell them I don't speak Yiddish.
That's a tremendous compliment.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
So you said you didn't have any experience with Yiddish. You had a little bit?
I had some. That is to say, I grew up hearing it. My grandparents spoke it I grew up in a small Texas town, but my grandparents were from Poland, and they lived in our small Texas town. And so it was like a little shtetl. There was 100 Jewish families in Lubbock, Texas. And I would hear Yiddish, but it was spoken in a way to prevent us from knowing what they were saying. So there was no desire to pass on the tradition, but I certainly had it in my ear. And on my mother's side of the family, those relatives also would sprinkle their dialogue with Yiddish. Then later in life, in my 30s, my brother and I, out of the blue, decided we wanted to try and learn Yiddish on our own. And we would call each other on the phone with our little grammar books and try and teach us Yiddish. And I don't know how well that went, but then finally in the summer of 2006, I was in Chicago doing a play and I had time, and so I contacted Northwestern and said, could I audit a Yiddish class? And the lady said, oh, my enrollment wasn't large enough, and she said, but you can come to my home and I'll teach you privately in my home. So I had a summer of one-on-one Yiddish. Again, not that I was fluent in Yiddish, but it gave me the chutzpah, which is a good Yiddish word, to tell the folks, Bina, please see me for this role, because one, I have worked with Joel Gray before, our director, mm-hmm. and two, I speak Yiddish, which was not 100% true, but it got me in the room.
It was truthy. It was
truthy.
My guests are Stephen Skibell and Jennifer Babiak. We're talking about Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish. You mentioned you worked with Joel Gray before, who's
yes.
directed it. When did you work with Joel?
We did a play, I think it was, you know, my mind is a little soggy, but I think it was 2015. It was a play called On Borrowed Time at Two River Theater Company in New Jersey, which has a small boy in one of the leading roles, which Joel played as a boy at the Cleveland Playhouse when he was maybe 11 or 10. So it's a play that he always had cherished very much, and so he directed it at this theater, and I was cast in that. And so we worked together then. But nothing like my part was a supporting role in a very large cast. So the working with him on Fiddler has been unbelievable, because as talented as a performer as we all know him to be, he is an amazing director and an amazing director for actors in English or Yiddish. And it's just been a joy working with him, and his insights, I can't even tell you. He had such specific ideas about what this musical is that maybe had never been unearthed before. And he had seen the original Fiddler on the Roof in its out-of-town tryout in D.C. in 1960, whatever. And from that time on, he has just been thinking about this musical, deeply thinking about it. And so as our leader in this Yiddish foray, he has been instrumental in the success of what audiences seem to be just loving so deeply. Every night, people just are moved beyond belief by this story, and it's been a joy to work with him on it.
Joel's a theater icon. What have you learned from him, Jennifer?
I mean, he really is a legend, and he's stripped down this huge musical to this you know, intimate story, and lets the story speak for itself, and these characters really has opened our eyes to these intimate moments. A lot of audiences are really responding to that, and some people have said, you know, it was in Yiddish, and it's like I'm understanding it even more now. And I felt like that too. I loved watching him work with all the other actors as well, and I had these moments like, oh, that's it. It's like I'm seeing this for the first time, this show that I've done before and seen, you know, a million times. He really he knows these characters so well. And it is like he's been thinking about it for so long and has this idea of what the show can be, and it's just been magical.
Yeah. And the other thing is, as we said, we had a very frantic initial rehearsal period. So when we moved uptown, we had another week of rehearsal. And you might think it would only be about, oh, instead of standing here, you stand here. But Joel came in that first day of that first week of rehearsal, and he wanted to get back into it and even go deeper. Mm-hmm. He wanted to push us further than we had ever gone downtown, you know. And the amazing thing about him is he's such obviously a showman, and he knows how to sell a song and be such a great entertainer. But he loves the craft of acting, and he loves the detailed work of theater and how it can very subtly move. And I'm just the biggest fan.
You mentioned that you said he unearthed something about the show and the show's meaning and message. What's an example of that?
Well, a big example is that, and people have come to our show and hear the song Do You Love Me, which is in the second act between Golda and Tevye, where the traditional kind of reception of that number is Do You Love Me? Do I what?
Right.
You know,
right.
And Joel had tracked that early on in the first act, Tevye, when Laser Wolf is asking to marry Tevye's eldest daughter, Tevye's wrestling with it. And he then says, the butcher will care for her. He loves her. And he wanted that word love. That's the first time the word love enters the musical. And then we actually see the word love go throughout the play. And to highlight that, and that, so then finally in the second act, when this husband and wife who have had at least 5 children who have survived into adulthood, the husband asks the wife, we've been through all this, but let me ask you a question. Do you love me? And he won't let go of the question. And rather than have it be a kind of funny moment, it's a deeply moving and powerful moment to see these people well into their middle life say, is there something we may have missed that our children are getting? And are we able to think on those terms now in a way we never have? That is mind-blowing in terms of unearthing that, just how love courses through this musical and the journey for Tevye specifically and for the characters in general, how they deal with love.
And it's a time of rapid change, you know, everything. It's like, can they keep up? And then it's this moment of really reflection and thinking about love and, you know, something that is new to them. And, you know, it's so easy for the kids to think about, but it's like the parents, like, we never thought about it. It's not part of, it hasn't been part of our lives. And it's like, you know, I think of that now with like how things are rapidly changing, you know, social media and stuff. It's like, you know, trying to keep up with that. It's like, you know, in such a rapidly changing time to have this moment of just, you know, reflection. And it's such an intimate moment. There's, in our production, there's just 2 benches and it's just the 2 characters. And it's so simple and lovely. And Joel really, really did bring that out. It's incredible.
We're talking about Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish. It's at Stage 42. Now it runs to
September 1st.
This is exciting. Stephen Skoubell and Jennifer Babiak are in studio with me. The staging. It's interesting that you mentioned the staging. Can you describe it for our audience?
Yeah,
simple.
I mean, it's so beautifully, poetically simple. Beowulf bore it. Tony Award-winning set designer did the sets, and Anhold Ward did the costumes, and so they're beautiful and simple. They seem real. We might look like Jews in Williamsburg to you. There's sort of a timeless quality to the way we are dressed, and yet there's a nod to the icons that people will recognize, Tevye's cap or he puts on the boots, but it's so beautiful. And then the set itself is very open. made entirely of brown paper, very open. And for instance, the fiddler, we have this wonderful gal named Lauren Thomas, who is our fiddler. And that's also a little bit of a beautiful skewing, that the fiddler should be a woman, especially about if it's a story about a man who seems to be surrounded by wives and daughters.
Yeah.
And so the fiddler, which is sort of a extension of his own thinking, is also a woman, possibly, or a young man. We don't necessarily know. But she truly plays the violin. And so the play begins. She walks out on the stage, and there's been set a table and a chair on a table and another chair on that chair. It looks somewhat dangerous. And she, with her violin, just walks up, walks up, walks up, finally to the top of this pile and starts playing her violin. So the image of the fiddler on the roof is abstracted in a way, but you absolutely get the danger of what it is to try and climb that pile. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that to me is just a simple way of how our show looks.
Yeah, and it's very, there's minimal props and set pieces. And, you know, the dream is normally this huge, you know, spectacle. And it is like probably our biggest number in the show.
It's a spectacle in ours, but in a kind of different way.
In a different way, yeah. The bed is, you know, just the benches and the chairs, and it's like creates this little bed for Gold Antevia. And I don't want to give anything away, but it is like an amazing, it's our version of what a spectacle number could be, but it's still very simple.
But I will also add that our choreographer, Stash Kmiek, has direct lineage to Jerome Robbins, and so knows the choreography. He had done original productions of Fiddler, performed in it, and then sort of has choreographed it. And there is, I think, the choreography always wants to honor Jerome Robbins' choreography. I mean, I think that might be legal, although I don't know, that they can't really digress too far from the choreography. But so the choreography absolutely honors the Jerome Robbins, and our dancers, we've got this group of Russian dancers, men and women, they just take that empty stage, what is a minimal stage, and just fill it with incredible dancing, and which really points to, as perhaps minimal that the setting is, the dancing really honors the glory of the original production and the original choreography. That is timeless.
Yes, it's exhilarating. We have the iconic bottle dance. Every night it's like, we're, you know, on the edge of our seats, because
they really
do
are
have
balancing
the bottles on their hats, and it's so exciting. And the L'chaim scene is the original Jerome Robbins choreography, and it is so amazing. The dancing every night, it's like, it's just so exciting. I remember watching that scene for the first time in rehearsals, and all the girls, we were in the audience watching them, and we didn't have the super titles yet, and we're like howling laughing at the scene between Tevye and Laser, and then our Yiddish coach Matel Didner came over and said, do you guys know this scene? You know, you guys were laughing in the right places. And we're like, no, but they're so believable, and so you don't need, a lot of times you don't need the super titles, because it's just that they're so wonderful. But anyway, that scene is amazing. The choreography and the dancing, these dancers are incredible.
So Stephen and Jennifer, you're playing iconic characters.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned all of these iconic scenes. Mm-hmm. How do you make it your own and make it new when something is so iconic?
Well, I will tell you that doing it in Yiddish helps, because it doesn't even begin to sound like the way Zero Mostel did it, you know? Mm. So that's a blessing. I jokingly say that when I got cast in this, I'd always wanted to play Tevye, because I played him when I was 17. I played him when I was 21, but I wanted to play him age appropriate. And I finally got cast as Tevye, and I'm playing him in Yiddish. Like, how great, you know? But it's actually been such an award, a reward, and a... it's released me in terms of not feeling the pressure of having to stand up to other performances because it's subtly different and I'm enjoying it. But Joel, again, I have to say, Joel absolutely had notions about how there were ways to do the role which had not really been explored before, with a little less showman and a little more truth and reality, which I just eat up. You know, I love that notion. And so the blessing, of course, is that it's Fiddler on the Roof. So we know it works and we know it's got a great story with great tunes. And so by turning it in Yiddish, we're able to just probe it a little deeper.
Yeah. And the Yiddish does help, you know, just approaching it in a new way. And because this is such an intimate production, it's just throwing yourself into the story, into these characters, and it feels so different. And the music is so beautiful in the Yiddish. You know, that's different too. Kind of when I was learning that and finding that, it felt so new and felt so. Like I could make it my own because I never heard it before. There is a recording of the Yiddish production in Israel. It's Joel really did help us sort of find this in a new way, that it didn't feel like similar to anything that I had heard before in Fiddler, you know.
I mean, the crazy
version.
Thing, though, is that, like, doing If I Were a Rich Man, which in our version, it's different. It says If I Were a Rothschild, which is taken from a Shalom Aleichem story, which is If I Were a Rothschild. So Shraga Friedman, who translated into Yiddish in 1964, knew Shalom Aleichem to sort of tweak it a little bit that way. But, you know, I've heard people say to me, that my If I Were a Rich Man is unlike any other If I Were a Rich Man they've ever seen. And that always surprises me because I kind of always do feel like there's such a lure to do it like Zero Mostel. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's aspects of it, but I'm really only following what's in the song. It's not like I'm trying to do something that's not in the song. So I feel like, well, if anyone else who has sung it has been true to the song, I'm being true to the song. So why should mine feel so different to anyone? But I'm happy that they feel that way, but I'm really just trying to honor what is in the song, what's in the text of the song. Mm-hmm. And for example, if Tevye says, the thing I would want, I love this line. He says, if I were rich, I would have time. And if I had time, I could go to shul and I could pray 3 times a day. And that should be, that's not the house and the chickens and the geese. That really is the essence of who he is. And what luxury that would afford him in life would be to constantly talk to God. That's kind of a mind-blowing realization about what the song is about, but that's what the song says. So I'm just really doing what the song says.
Before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on the themes of the show. Yeah. You know, about tradition and family and protecting yourself in situations. I'm curious for you if it feels sort of this moment,
yes,
of this moment culturally.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, Shalom Aleichem wrote these stories over a century ago, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, and it's unbelievable that this is a timeless tale, and people are really identifying with it now, how current it is, you know, about people getting pushed out of their homes or not being accepted and not being welcome. It's universal.
Yeah. I have to say that when I first experienced Fiddler on the Roof, I thought that it was maybe a sort of nostalgic tale about Jews of the past, and even what from my perception was sort of a rose-colored history pageant. It's become painfully clear that the story is a never-ending story about about love and fathers and family, that we know, but also about people being ostracized and people being marginalized and pushed out from their homes. Is a tale that is still a Jewish tale, but it's a tale for all people. And so that is also an aspect of our story which seems to be striking a deep chord that that is meaningful and needful to tell the story as well as fantastic entertainment. That's what's so magagical about Fiddler on the Roof.
It has all of it. All of it. You're hysterically laughing. Yes, all of it. hysterically laughing 1 minute, and then you're just moved to tears, you know. It just has all of it, yeah.
Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish is playing through September at Stage 42 Theater off Broadway. Stephen and Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure meeting you, and congratulations on your great success.
Thank you.
We'll leave with a little bit from Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish.
Alle